everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of If You've Come This Far. And in this episode, Chris and I are talking with Joe Gajunas. Chris, maybe tell folks why we talked to Joe. Had a very pleasant conversation with Joe.
But Joe, we found to be someone we wanted to talk to because of a documentary that he's been producing. It's on PBS. The pilot is out. We were expecting, I think he said, 4 new episodes out in later in the spring. Yep. And the documentary series is called Grown Up Dad. Yep. And what he is setting out to explore is really all the challenges of what it means to be a dad in this day and age. And so he's addressing a lot of topical issues. He's talking to people that, like us, have gone through or are going through this challenge. And we wouldn't be doing this for a petty challenge. This is among the most meaningful challenges that we face in life, right? Is how do we raise young people to be good grown-up people, right? And yeah. So yeah. I just appreciate that he's tackling that head on in a way that's really accessible.
Yeah, and I think, the other thing that I found interesting, so I saw an article on him in the Tribune, is kind of the self-awareness piece, right? I mean, it kind of goes to, as he's inspecting how good of a dad he's being, and he talks about watching Bluey and making the comparison between Bandit, who's the dad in Bluey, and, you know, am I doing the work that I really think I'm doing? So I think, and he talks about that in our conversation, and I think that's a really interesting aspect of this, right? Is that self-awareness.
Right.
And a willingness to look at yourself and say, how am I being the best dad, human, man I can be?
Yeah. Just some self-reflection is sometimes like the first step. I will say, and we didn't cover this in our conversation with him, I don't think. I've watched the pilot of Grown Up Dad twice. I've not seen a single episode of Bluey. And yet you speak of Bluey very fluently, like you know this series. But your kids are too old. How do you know Bluey?
Yeah, because it's out. It was like the most watched show on Netflix or something like that. It's like it's in the zeitgeist. Is that the right word? Maybe you're just culturally deficient. I don't know. Maybe you just don't know what's going on.
Or maybe I'm busy doing push-ups, cold showers, and trying to help people.
Yeah, okay. That's from the previous episode. Nobody gives a shit about that anymore.
Anyway, I really appreciated Joe. He's so earnest.
Yes, he is. He's really a good guy. I think people are going to dig him. And watch the. We'll have a link to the show, obviously, in the notes. Guy goes to Australia for the first episode. It's like, what? Couldn't you just stay in Philly and do it there?
That sounds like we didn't push him on this, but that sounds a little bit like a boondoggle, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, he just randomly shows up at some dude's house. Hey, let's talk about dads. Like, yeah,
kind of cool though. Kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah,
we had a good conversation. We'll let you listen to it now. Here's Joe Gajunas.
Hey, good morning,
Joe.
Hey, Joe.
We're doing it.
We are doing it. We don't see you. I don't know if you're. Want to be on camera.
I do. No problem. Where?
Of course he does. He's doing like a TV show.
Yeah, that's right. He's a film guy.
Right.
Here, well, I'll just say.
We're not going to use any video. We just want to see your handsome face.
Yeah.
Well, you're not using any of this video. It's just the audio.
No, we just use the audio.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, look at us, Joe. Look at us. Would it be wise for us to do video?
Chris and Sean, very nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you too.
It was great.
Remind me where you are, Joe.
I'm in Philadelphia.
Oh, Philly. Go Eagles, right?
Go Birds. Right. Go Birds. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Chris, you're where in New England?
I am actually in Chicago, and Sean's Chicago, just outside of Chicago.
All right. That's right. Chicago. Great. Duh Bears. Sorry. So
No. Let me clarify. Because I grew up Massachusetts. Oh,
look at his sweatshirt.
Oh, I got a Patriots sweatshirt on.
Well, you do.
Yeah.
You do.
It's obnoxious, isn't it?
So, well, wait, speaking of obnoxious, what I've been telling people is, you know, because people are like, oh God, I'm sick of the Chiefs. I'm like, okay, now I know how people felt when the Pats were, you know, own the NFL.
Yeah.
And I'm sick of the Chiefs too. So
I'm really sick of the Chiefs.
Go Birds.
Yeah.
I think we got the momentum on this.
I do too.
Even though I think our team 2 years ago was better, I think we have the momentum this time. So,
do you really? I mean, with Saquon, you think?
Yeah, Saquon's pretty tough.
Who would you?
Saquon's insane.
Just his whole attitude too. It's just really fun to watch.
It is. He was a very nice guy too. I was at a early in the season before he even broke out. I mean, he was already good, but he was like at a Top Golf event I got invited to, and met him. He's very down to earth. It's like he's just meeting people at Top Golf. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's cool.
Wait, that's great.
So you're a film guy, Joe. You're from Philly. You remind me a little bit of Patton Oswalt, who was married to a late friend of mine. Did you ever see the movie Big Fan?
No.
You guys should both watch this movie.
Never heard of it, actually.
I've never heard of this.
Sort of a dark comedy.
I just started AP Bio, actually, so it's interesting that you mentioned
Patton. Yeah, you got a little of Patton in you.
I will take that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll take that compliment. I appreciate it. What is Big Fan?
Well, he plays if I'm recalling correctly, I don't remember isn't there a big rivalry between the Eagles and the Giants?
Yeah,
there is.
But it's more like we hate Dallas, but so many teams just hate Dallas.
NFC East, they all hate each other.
They all hate each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in any case, Patton plays a character who is one of those rabid NFL fans. He calls into the sports radio talk shows, right? Remember those? And he scripts it out beforehand. So it's all pretty, and anyway, it's dark. I think it's a really good film. And it's right in your hood. So you should check it out.
Well,
I just need to remind Chris. So Silver Linings Playbook, Chris, is, you know, about Eagles fans, and it's, you know, they get a big fight against the Giant when he goes to the Giants game. So, because we had Matthew Quick on the show, Joe, who wrote Silver Linings Playbook, and
that's awesome.
It was a really good conversation. But Chris,
The diner is 10 minutes from me.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. They still have the sign for like, this is the booth where they film. Yeah.
Oh, that is funny.
So I just want to, I think how we got here, Joe, is I saw a piece on you in the Trib, the Chicago Tribune, about what you were doing with growing up. And so I'm like, okay, this guy's right in our wheelhouse. So let's reach out and have a conversation.
I appreciate that.
Tracked you down from your website, and now how many months later, guys? Are we
I don't even want to joke about that. It's been a long
time. We've been bad too. We had to reschedule times, I think. But here we are.
Here we are.
And I'm gonna start out with this. So this morning I saw a report that is I think he was interviewed on CBS, that says, and I haven't told my wife this yet because she ripped me a new one, is that men suffer from postpartum depression as well as women, like 10% of men. And so, Joe, I mean, are you aware of this? And you know, growing up dad, it sounds like, you know, there's a percentage of dads that, you know, kind of suffer at the birth of their children. So
I'm aware of it. I have not as extensively researched that piece of it, though. I am aware of it. And there's an episode we're doing soon on friendship, loneliness, and mental health. And that is where I learned it, because one of the guys we interview in LA mentioned it. But we didn't really have time to go real in depth on it. Uh-huh. But when I heard that, I think it was like 10-12%, you know, something.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's important. All this is important to understand, like, what men, what dads are going through in the entire experience. And it's not just this. So it's like my show has become really very topical. It is like, what are we doing? How do we become parents today as dads? What do we want to be as dads? And that question really hasn't even been asked and answered yet either. We're really beginning with the precipice of, I think, figuring out what it is we can be and what we all want to be. It was a question no one ever asked us growing up. And so, Sean, you've got older kids, right? And Chris, you've got kids.
I have three, two girls and a boy, 30, 28, and 24.
And I've got two girls, 19 and 16. So we're a little ahead of you.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a little bit. So yeah, mine's eight. In the show for season two, I think we say he's seven just for continuity because we started when he was seven, but yeah, he's eight. So
Well,
it's
let's talk
been.
a little bit about, like, maybe give us, I want to give you a chance to sort of set the table with what is Grown Up Dad, and maybe share with us really, how you came upon this idea and what inspired it.
Thank you for that. It was the idea for Grown Up Dad came up in the beginning of COVID when we're all in lockdown. I've got a 3-year-old and I'm just feeling completely overwhelmed, as I'm sure all parents were in that moment, right? We were not sure what to do. We were a little bit worried and we're like, how are we going to do this in a lockdown situation? I felt just wholly unprepared to be a great dad. And realizing all of my role models were terrible, more or less. I had a father who, while I think he tried at times, he looked at the provider model of what he was supposed to be doing. And so he worked out of state. I saw him, there'd be some months I saw him like 2, 3 days. And so I was really raised by my mom, but I missed that example, that guidance from him. So when you don't have a dad around growing up, you don't have that kind of personal relationship and connection. How do you feel that? How are you going to do this yourself? And so, what actually helped save me was that pandemic is really when the show Bluey just exploded on Disney and started to really gain traction. And my role model for parenting became a cartoon dog from Australia. And in Bandit. And I'm like, this is the first time I've seen a dad that who I want to be on TV. Growing up, it was, Tim the Tool Man Taylor, basically, or was Al Bundy, and Married with Children. I'm like, these are not the dads that I aspire to be today, even though they were funny, and those shows were great. But I'm like, I can't be like that. So how do I figure the how to do this? And I was not finding it anywhere. Then I find this cartoon dog. I'm like, okay, there's something here. And role models really are important. And so I just decided, like, I got to figure out the kind of dad I want to be. And so in the pilot, I actually go to Australia. I talk to other dads who where Bluey is a huge thing. It's not just, blown up here. It is, everyone knows and talks about it when you're a parent down under. And then I come back here and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make. So actually, at the time, I was going to make a movie. I was going to make a US Australia comparison. And then fortunately, PBS saw one of my trailers and they're like, you should make a TV show. And I was thrilled because at the time, I was realizing I was having trouble talking about everything I wanted to talk about, even in a feature film. And so they said, make a pilot. The extra challenge was I had 13 weeks to make the pilot because of their deadline of when shows have to be reviewed and voted on for the next year. And at the time, they're like, how much material do you have? And I was like, oh, well, I have a 3-minute trailer. They're like, okay, well, we need 30 minutes in 13 weeks. And I was like, okay. So I kind of locked myself in a hotel room trying to figure out a script. My producer, Josh, and I have been working on this a long time, and but we got something great done for the pilot. Did really well. We had over 100,000 viewers across 60% of the country. Most of our broadcasts were in prime time. For a sh brand new show with an unknown guy, it was really good. And then, so the next episode that we've already have done, this is topical, and we've realized that this can really be a great way to continue talking about things that all parents are going through now. So my next episode is on screen time challenges. And that episode was done over this past summer, went to PBS, and 96% of the stations are like, yes, we need to air this thing. So very excited. So I will have 5 episodes coming out in June. The pilot will come back out again, and I have 4 new ones. Screen time challenges, evolving masculinity, friendship, loneliness, and mental health. And then finally, you know, basically it's on media literacy and how to help our kids not become trolls online. That's essentially what we're trying to talk about here, because the internet, no matter, the internet is just changing so rapidly. I don't even want to talk about AI and everything that happened this week, you know, but it's like, how do we help our kids understand forever, and how do we help them understand their power, and but also like the pain that they can cause people too, and understanding this media landscape, especially when, you know, fact checkers don't matter anymore.
True.
So you talk about Bandit, Ed Bundy, Tim Taylor. Do you have a model for what you think is good fatherhood?
I mean, I'm not joking. Like Bandit on Bluey is probably the most well-known.
And I have some perspective, but model. As we said, my kids are a little bit older. Can you tell us what Bandit's model is for being a father?
Well, what's great about the show is that Bluey episodes are 7 minutes long.
Yeah. And,
you know, so you're able to hit topics very quickly. Real life parenting situations. You know, the biggest criticism of the show, I think, has been that the parents are too perfect. Like, no one can be that perfect. And my thought on that has always been like, well, they're not perfect, but they're great parents for 7 minutes. You know, and it's like, when I am exhausted, when I am tired, when I don't know how to go through the, you know, finish the day up, I really realize, I'm like, okay, I don't need to be perfect for the next 3 hours till bedtime. It's like, I need to find a great 7 minutes. And that's what your kid's going to remember at the end of the night. They're not going to care about the rest. And so I try to find that strength to be a great parent for 7 minutes that night. Wow. And then I can bring down the expectations, I think, for the rest of the night too. Because we've all experienced that. We're all
sure.
The day has been hard. You know, how are you going to get to bedtime? And it's so difficult. But I find that to be inspirational and also in an amount that's realistic. Like, I think I can for 7 minutes.
So what is perfect look like in those 7 minutes?
That is a good question. I think a lot of it is around intentionality. A lot of it is putting down your own devices and trying and getting into their world. And I think parents too often just forget to remember that they were kids and bring themselves into that age and wonder and curiosity and laughter. And, you know, just you can ask the questions about their day that are, you know, targeted, like what they like. You know, don't just be like, how was school today? You know, it's about, okay, what did you do in this class? You know, I try to throw my kids some, you know, just randomly, like, I know, you know, what did you do in art class today? Okay. So he'll get a little specific, and, you know, if that works, great. Then I feed off that and then try to figure something out. We will, you know, if nothing's working, and there's always a good, you know, let's talk about a game or a topic that he loves. Right now he is obsessed with baseball and stats and actually how to curve a ball. And I'm like, great, I'm not a stat guy, but I do like baseball, and I can find a little way into his world and just kind of ask him a few questions. And anytime I can, man, go to dad humor, dad jokes, and just get fun, right? Like, hey,
So part of perfect is being present, obviously, right? Right. I mean, right. Maybe that's all of it. Being present.
Dads, what do you think perfect is?
Oh, well, I don't. The furthest thing from this is being perfect.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just looking for a passing grade.
No, you're not. You're not just looking for a passing grade. You want to be. You've taken time out of your life to talk about this. So I mean, really, like, what's a way that you always?
I think you hit it. I think it's, you know, for me, it's not only in my relationships with my kids, but in relationships with everyone. It's this, you know, idea of being intentional, idea of being curious, and being present. I mean, I think if we can do those three things at least, we're going to go, you know, we're going to, I don't know that we get to perfect, but it's not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
So,
and forgive me, I don't want to be perfect, because perfect is pretty boring, to be honest. But it's like, how do we get that? Like, let's just make sure they had a great memory.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. Just one.
Joe, I'm going to switch back a little bit to the business part of this. Not, I don't want to spend long on it, but First of all, had you worked previously in documentaries or films or TV?
So I have a production studio where I do largely photo and video work, mostly small commercials, though, small films for companies, some political work here and there on TV. So I understood the amount of work that was in front of me. I thought making something for broadcast TV is a whole other level between lawyers and reviews and permissions and just the number of people too that are going to weigh in and talk to you about your product. So that part, I at least had some idea. And so that is actually my day job, and that is how I make money, is by being able to do some sort of production. PBS is a wonderful distribution outlet. Everyone knows PBS. Everyone can access it. You can still go online, search Grown Up Dad and PBS, and my show will pop up and you can watch it. But PBS does not provide me with any funding. And so my Grown Up Dad is a nonprofit that we've created to talk about education and ideas of parenting, but through the medium of television. And that's what Grown Up Dad is. And so the hardest part of this is actually the fundraising part. The most fun is talking to guys like you and to talk to other people really working to make parenthood and fatherhood better. The fundraising part is the one that I kind of suck at, and I've really had to put myself out there and ask people and try to push myself to be like, hey, we're doing something great here and we need your financial help.
Yeah. Well, and you sort of led into the second part of my question anyway, which was, even if PBS did provide some funding, like, being a documentarian is not the first way people think of to generate wealth, right? to get rich. And so
no,
I think
my midlife crisis, Chris, has been, let's make a TV show and spend all of my free capital on trying to be a better dad. I didn't buy a car, go on a crazy vacation. I'm like, let's make a documentary. And that was my midlife crisis.
And hope the Eagles can win a Super Bowl, right?
Another one. I was here in 2018. That was a
easy. Great. Easy, easy.
Knock on wood. Knock
easy.
On wood. Okay.
Are you airing this before the Super Bowl, please?
Actually, we probably won't. So that's good. We won't curse anything.
No, everyone will know the answer to that before me.
So you didn't think, okay, this is how I'm going to get rich. And it was a mission driven thing. I'm curious about the documentarian mentality, because I would think, like, it takes more guts to put something out there when you don't know the answers than if you did know the answers. I don't know if anyone ever knows the answers, but, like, were you nervous about that? Were you like, okay, look, I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm still figuring out fatherhood. I'm going to talk to a bunch of other guys that are doing the same.
It's a really good question and timely. I just wrapped our episode on evolving masculinity. And if you want to have a conversation that never ends with, 3 billion different perspectives, I think it's on masculinity for men and what that actually means today. And even I think like-minded guys are going to be very different, have different takes on what makes them feel masculine. And how do you, and so the writing this episode was very hard for me, because I also don't want to create or say this is the answer, because I think the problem with masculinity right now is there are so many loud voices saying what it is, and it's putting people in boxes, and it's actually harming people, harming men more than doing them good. And that is what I experienced growing up, I think, as a masculinity that did more harm than good. And I still want to feel strength. I still want to feel tough. And there are times that, but I don't want to not feel those things when I was changing my kid's diaper, or when I was, holding him, saying it's okay to cry. Like, I think in evolving this, we have to not throw out everything that we've used as a society to get us here, but recognize the harm that it was doing to others. And so how do we figure out a way to balance those two things? And I don't want to put people in boxes that's just going to do the same harm to them. And so I'm trying to be vulnerable with my own issues, my own things that hurt me growing up, and then recognizing I want to find a different role model and, you know, a way to talk about this in a healthy way has been both really rewarding and challenging. I've gone through many drafts on that script. Really have.
That's really good.
This podcast is about being real with each other. And sometimes that means admitting life is hard. That's where our friends at Mental come in. It's a wellness app with tools and support for life's messiness. No toxic positivity, no gurus, just personalized, affordable, science-backed tools rooted in real-life coaching. So if you've been thinking, I should probably do something for my mental health, maybe this is that something. Visit getmental.com/IYCTF to give it a try.
You talk about your dad, I think, in the piece, and you may have even done it in the first episode. And I made a note about the issue of being a good dad and being a good worker. And so talking about, you know, evolving masculinity and these structures that we've put in place there, right? I mean, the whole idea of being a provider first. And how has you gone?
Who did you just have on your show? I feel like I can't remember his name. I feel like you just had this. You were talking about this too, in one of your last episodes as well, about how it's hard to take paternity leave, right?
We're talking to Jeremy Smith.
Jeremy, yeah. That's right. Thank you.
So I'm curious, yeah. as you've thought through this, and even for yourself, it's that, as you said, I mean, that challenge between the models of masculinity, right? Which says and I'm not beating this in the ground, but maybe I am, the perfect dad. Can I also be a perfect worker and the provider and what that model presents to me? Those are very conflicting perspectives, yeah. Right? And then factor into it your partner's perspective on what that means, because you can make the decision. We could make the decisions ourselves, but what if our partner it's inconsistent for her or him? I mean, that adds a whole nother level of frustration and angst, right?
There's something I say in the first episode about, you know, when I give more time to my wife, I feel guilty that I'm not being a better dad. When I feel like I'm giving more time to my son, I feel like I've stopped being a good worker. You know, when to my job, right. I feel like I've stopped being a good husband, you know, and that cycle. What's ironic in saying that cycle though, too, someone pointed out to me after the episode, they're like, you never actually recognize to give yourself any love in that I always was a dad or a husband or a worker, and I was never like present for me, and I was like, oh shit, like I forgot to think about myself in that entire circle too. And so the idea that the idea of finding balance in that, it's never going to be perfect. And you're always going to have a struggle to accomplish all of those things, you know, together and make sure everyone, and I don't know how you're going to make all of them happy all the time like that. Yeah. Right. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we are. And I think balance is, there's nothing about balance. I think it's at every moment, there's something that's out of balance. And that might be okay. I'm curious, when you do think about yourself in that mix, what does that look like?
I'm smirking over here because I realize I don't.
Okay.
I really don't. And I fail at that. And that's one of that's why it was such a cruel realization when someone told me that. I'm like, right. I put myself so last in the process that I didn't even think to put myself as an option. I put A, B, and C, and I didn't even think about D would be me. And that is something I also need to work on, because if I lose myself, if I am that, I don't take care of myself, then everything else fails, right? And that's something really I am trying to work on personally, because that's been a failure when I don't even mention that as one of the options.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, is your old man still around?
Yes, he is. And actually, you know, I talk about him as not being around as a dad growing up, which is true. And, you know, he and I have had that conversation, but he is actually a decent, he's a pretty good grandfather. He definitely comes up every couple weeks. He lives a couple hours away from me, and he's a good grandfather. And that role has been beautiful to see. He definitely had to earn that position, but he has. But it is interesting to be like, he's being a better grandfather to my son than he was to his own son. And, but he makes my kid happy, and that's, and I want him to have a relationship with him. I don't want them to be estranged in any way.
Have you interviewed him for any of your episodes?
It's been on my mind. I'm actually worried it would be too emotional at times. And honestly, while my dad has been the motivation, I think, to make this show and to go in this direction, he's not the purpose of the show. The purpose has always been like, I want to be a better dad to my son, Gabe. And I want other dads to feel heard and seen. I think maybe my dad and I should go to a therapy session together or have a referee, honestly, between us as we talk about stuff more than be on an episode together. But I think as our relationship grows, it's definitely an option. I hope, I don't know if we can be that civil, and you know, it's PBS. I can't curse. So, you know,
there's that. Yeah. That constraint. Well, if I could drill down just one step further, do you think it would be too emotional for you or for him?
Me. It's still, as much as I forgive him and recognize what he thought he was being a good dad. There's still just a lot of pain and frustration there of you know, that part of my childhood that I wonder how things would have turned out if he had made the decision to say, no, I'm, you know, I can still be a provider and still be here. And he made a choice not to be here. And that's honestly part of it too. There was an active decision to be like, I'm not going to be home, and that's fine with me. I wouldn't make that decision.
Mm-hmm. What does he make of grown-up dad?
He has been, he says he's proud of it. He said, that's a really good question. Gosh, he does say he's proud of it. He has donated to the show, which I appreciate as well. I don't know though. There's a piece of this where I wonder if he knows that, like, if, okay, here's how I talk about my father, who I love, but have a complicated relationship with him, which I'm sure you and your listeners do too. It's like, I can take my dad if I give him this amount of bubble. You know, I give him like, okay, he can really be good if I think this is the world that he lives in. If I expand that bubble and I think that he can reach higher aspirations, that's when I get let down. And so I keep him within a smaller bubble and set lower expectations, but he can reach that. And when he does, I've decided that I'm going to be really happy with that because he's not going to change.
I was going to say, Sean, Todd brought up this past weekend, the Men Living meeting where members were invited to bring their fathers to these meetings. Mm-hmm. Do you remember him bringing that up?
Yes.
Yeah. And so we're sort of part of this nonprofit called Men Living. That's a men's group.
Yeah. I love that you bring so many men together. It's so powerful. It's so important. I'm talking about loneliness and friendship, and I love these groups.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, your first four episodes are sort of right in our wheelhouse. But I bring that up only because it's really interesting. Like, I think we all work to forgive our parents, not forgive, mm-hmm. but understand maybe. There were different expectations put on them at the time.
Right.
But also, you know, old dog, new trick, you know, it's harder to learn late in life. Anyway, I was interested in hearing if you talked to your dad about that. Sean, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. I first of all, I was going to say, you know, you using that old term, old man, to refer to his dad, yes. You know, I take exception with that. just let me note that.
Oliver, Sean, that is one heck of a beard. I love that. Even though I see a lot of gray, it is a beautiful beard, man.
Thank you, Joe. you brought up our conversation with Jeremy Smith, which, you know, heavily is focused on the idea of paternity leave. And I'm curious your perspective
and
on that.
The perspective in the workplace and how much pressure it is to take that. Like, I was really glad you guys had that conversation.
Yeah. So I'm curious about what your perspective is on, you know, if you think about, you know, being a grown up dad, being a good dad and or good partner, and that whole idea of taking your leave. By the way, I read today that the head coach for the Tennessee women Vols was back was back on the court side after 7 days of giving birth. Last night or the night before against South Carolina, which is crazy.
That is a little crazy.
And Dawn Staley was like, "Oh yeah, she's got, you know, women have the strength of 10 men." And I would agree with her.
I would agree.
So anything around this, you know, this idea of paternity leave, Joe, from what you see?
I love the fact that more companies are doing it. I really agree with, you know, what he was saying, though, that it really is an economic decision. I think it's a way to keep the best talent. And I think something I mentioned in our episode too is there is, I had on two kind of like business researchers, economists, who were talking about how men who actually had more time with their families during the day found that they were happier in their jobs, mm-hmm. actually, too. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I think about the cost of turnover. So I've had a business for 21 years now, too. I think about my own turnover, too. The idea of like, yeah, you lose someone and you know, you'll just replace them. It's like, that's not with talented people, not with, you know, the key clutch people in your organization. That right. takes months, if not years, sometimes to regain that level of knowledge and the opportunity costs lost. So I love seeing more organizations do this. Personally, I have a small business. You know, I have a staff of 8 full-time people. Yep. The idea of giving 4 months of paternity leave is absolutely impossible, sadly. I wish there was a federal policy that allowed everyone to take this and we were on the same level playing field. But I did have my first dad a couple years ago on staff. You know, I gave him an extra week. It's like he had 3 weeks of vacation. I gave him an extra week for paternity. I honestly just didn't have, you know, thousands of dollars ready in the bank to let him, you know, take off forever. So I tried to do something. Same thing for a mom in my organization, an extra week of time. But when my wife was pregnant, you know, there was no paid time off even. This is 8 years ago, you know, at a university. It was just like, yeah, you can take the time off. And actually, all right, it was half pay, excuse me, but the half pay, I think, ended up only covering like the health insurance or something. It wasn't even half pay, like whatever. It only covered health insurance. It's like, it was a joke. And then myself being an entrepreneur, you know, I needed to take time too. There was nothing set aside for it. I just had to rework your schedule. But becoming a dad, that key time, beginning of life, and how you form and those connections and you bond with your kid, especially, it is so different than moms do. And the thing I did that I didn't realize was going to keep me this connected, but my wife basically was like, I'm going to have the kid. You're going to change the diapers. Mm-hmm. And honestly, until my kid was body trained, like I think I changed 80, 85% of those diapers.
Wow.
She will back me up on that. And trust me, the best gift I got that year was my kid being potty trained. I'm like, no more diapers. Yes. And you know, and I didn't have to give birth. So I still think I won that.
Yeah.
It's important to have that time off, however you can give it, I think. And the companies are realizing it's a benefit to them too.
Yeah.
I wanted to shift gears a little bit real quick. You mentioned one of your episodes, I think you said is about screen time.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Screen time challenges. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you also, we started out talking about Bluey and about Australia, and I'm sure you guys are both aware of the law that Australia passed that's going to ban social media for kids under the age of 16.
I love that law.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to get your take on. Is in your conversations with all of your guests and your documentary subjects, that's probably not the right word, but you know what I mean. Is that coming up? Is that being expressed as one of the big challenges that they're facing?
I mean, you guys have teenagers, or at least, I mean, I know your kids are a little bit older, Sean, but you've dealt with all of this. It is, when we were growing up, this didn't exist, okay? And the hardest part about the phone, as great it is as a technical revolution, there's so much content that you are just receiving individually, privately, too. You know, that's one thing, even when you have a television on in the family room, like it was still kind of a joint activity and you can monitor it from the other room. And there's times where, yeah, I'll have him watching a YouTube video. I hear a bad word. I'm like, I just look at him and he knows, like, all right, I got to change the video. Like, I can't watch this anymore. But when you're on your device and you got headphones on, you don't know what they're watching. You don't know what they're consuming. And all you can do is, you know, teach them like what you think they should be looking at. And it's really hard because even content that looks like it's for kids can end up having really bad content, you know, bad words, violence, or just topics that an 8-year-old shouldn't be listening to. I'm a fan of social media being banned until you're a little bit later, until you really understand both, you know, what, you know, have a greater idea of what the world is around you. And honestly, I think a lot of kids too, I don't think they really miss it once they don't have it. And it makes them form relationships in a healthier person to person way. I think every kid and parent I've talked to, they're like, well, the kids will say like they love social, I'm sorry, they don't want to live without it, but they also hate it at the same time.
Right.
It's been like, okay, so that's basically the definition of being addicted. You know, it's like, you know, it's bad for you, but you can't live without it. You know, Chris, you're at a school, right? What do you see?
I don't work at a school. I mean, and I'm on the business side of things.
Okay.
I go back to it being a source of comparison, you know, which I think, I don't know, Churchill, someone said that's the thief of joy. but right, that makes me sad for our kids when they become obsessed with what other kids their other peers have, whether it's looks or money or friends or whatever. And
so much of it is fake too. So much of it isn't real, and they're saying that it's real. And it's like, so how, you're comparing yourself to something that doesn't even exist.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that law as well. So we'll see how they implement it, and maybe it becomes a model around the world.
I mean, I hope it is successful for the same reasons. You know, for our son, who's 8, social media wasn't an issue yet. He doesn't have his own phone, although we're getting to that point to have that conversation. That's why I wanted to do that episode. But particularly, he was having a lot of trouble around video games. And, you know, he's a great kid, loves to read, active. But video games, he was having terrible transitions to stop it and get off of it. You could tell he was a different person, and his attitude. He was a little jerk. I mean, there's no other way to say it, you know, with video games when they were trying to get him to stop. And so we really had to figure out ways to stop things earlier, to set more limits, to identify other ways to help him handle this. Because I know video games, especially for a young boy, they're a huge way to socialize too with other kids. So you didn't want to take it away. You wanted to make it, again, healthy in his life and also set limits. And I just realized too, like the amount of time he was watching a screen was getting out of control. When we looked at it over the course of a week, and it's like what the recommendations are of, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day. I'm like, oh God, my kid is getting more than that. Like, that is bad. I need to fix this. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I have worked on some, you know, we had conversations, we worked on, you know, identifying what our own limits were. And then also helpful for us, it was a little bit of an easier solution. He is active. So like, he's got baseball and soccer, you know, every week, both sports right now, even in the winter. And, you know, that, and also we got a ping pong table. I was fortunate that we have a basement. We're like, okay, let's move some stuff out of here. Let's get a ping pong table. Let's find active things to do where he doesn't want to do a screen. And so all of that has helped significantly reduce his screen time. And he's much, much better with video games too right now.
What are you smiling about, Chris?
I'm smiling about Joe's comment that Gabe was being a jerk. And this goes to my question of, how will we know when we've succeeded as a parent? I mean, I've said this to countless people, like, I've always loved my 2 daughters, and there have been times when I didn't like them a whole lot. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we need to wait until they're adults and maybe even that's too soon, but we certainly don't need to wait until then to gather the evidence that we have raised good, kind humans. But what are you seeing in Gabe these days that is a reflection of you guys doing it right?
That's a really good question. But Chris, I want to shout out something you just said about, you know, liking your kids too. And it's actually when Gabe is essentially kind of asked, you know, in a way, like, prove that I love him or something like that. You know, if he's like giving me crap, but it's like, Gabe, as your dad, I'm always going to love you, but I also don't just love you. I like you as a person. And it's one of the things I like reinforcing with him, because I want him to know I think he's doing a good job at so many things in his life. Now, there's also tons of things where I'm like, Gabe, how is it that I've had to say this five times and you still haven't heard it? You still don't hear me and you don't see the trash in front of your face and, you know, everything else that you're challenged by with an 8-year old growing up, not realizing anything outside of this is his world. But I, how do we know we're doing a good job is, you know, honestly, I don't think we need to, I don't think we should set the bar super high in this sense. Like your kid's going to school, your kid has got some friends. You have a life as well. And you're trying to create, you know, healthy boundaries. And some days, like, look, you fed them, you clothed them, you housed them, you're doing a good job. Like, we honestly need to say that more often, because this is so hard, especially now when most households, both parents are working, if not full time, you know, part time, full time, because it's so expensive to live right now. When it is, you can't just send your kids outside anymore, you know, and that part's sad too. It's, well, I live in the city, and you know, I can't just like say, see you, Gabe, I'll see you in 4 hours, you know, for dinner. Like, that doesn't exist anymore, sadly. And we can go off to a tangent on that.
We could.
Well, we, yeah, really, really,
we could. Yeah.
Let's tell parents, look, your kid's safe, your kid's fed, and you know they're treating you and others with respect. Like, you're doing a good job.
So the fact that I have some years on you guys, and my kids are older, I'll say how I measure it is they want to hang out with me and I want to hang out with them. I mean, my oldest is
love
here
that.
With
I love that
their fiance. We're with the whole family is going to Vegas in a month, and Jack and Lisa were just at the Natty. So they want to hang out with us and we want to hang out with them. And so that's, I don't know. That's kind of
like success,
right? I mean that, yeah. And it's really fun when they're older and they want to do that. So even though Lisa is aggravated right now, because Katie's a slob. So the house.
So that part, picking up the trash doesn't end, right?
See, I don't mind. I'm like, okay, they're just going to be that way, but she's freaking out. So anyways, not Sean, freaking out. She's aggravated. Okay.
I still, people keep asking me like, what year is the hardest or worst? And I'm like, every year keeps getting better. I know that's going to stop. So Sean, for you, your kids want to hang out with you. Was there a year, was there a gap of age where that was questionable in your own?
No, I think it's the, you know, the middle school, early high school years are probably the ones where, you know, they're kind of going through puberty and they're figuring out their friendships. And, you know, my parents are kind of annoying. I think those were probably the years where I was like, okay, this is a little bit of the disconnect. And then they, you know, post high school, then it became, you know, reestablishment of a healthy relationship. I mean, there's still a connection, but it was probably more, there was more friction in those years than anything else.
The way I've gotten the question and answered, you know, I've gotten a similar question and answered that was, a lot of times I've heard parents of younger kids, colleagues, whatever, say, tell me it gets easier. And I was like, I say, I can't tell you that. I can just tell you that it gets different.
Right? Yes,
because
totally.
Challenges of raising a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old and a 4-year-old are so, they're just apples and oranges. But I think that finding the joy in that is the key. And then when they become adults, and Sean, you heard me talk about this recently over the break, my 19-year-old and 16-year-old were with their nieces and nephews, or their cousins and their grandmothers at certain points. And they were so engaged and delightful. And I was like, oh, just an exhale and a sigh of like, oh my God, beautiful. They're lovely adults.
Well, I think it's interesting too, Joe. I mean, you call it, you know, grown up dad, and it's, you know, the implication that it's a growing process for you as your child is growing as well. And so, Chris, to your point, I mean, everybody's changing. So, you know, so it may get, it's always different because we're changing as they're changing. We're growing as they're growing. I mean, just the issue of screen time, you know, I'm listening to you talk about the kids. I mean, how about us as adults? I mean, we say, oh yeah, we got to protect the kids from it. But in the meantime, we're mainlining heroin every day when we're on the socials. So we're modeling that. Are we modeling that for, we're saying, oh yeah, no, that you can't be on it, but then we're modeling it with something that's may not be very healthy. And so it's just an interesting.
The 15 hours that TikTok was down was a beautiful thing, Sean.
Right. Right.
Seriously, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one is particularly addictive.
Oh, yes. So yeah. That's, you know, always being mindful of that, I think is important. So
it really is. I want to go back to Chris. You said something about joy earlier, and I was so glad you brought up that word because no one, I think in this process, becoming a dad, there was nobody who told me I would find joy in this, that I would, it would, everyone was saying how hard it was going to be, or it was like, oh, you'll figure it out. It was those two extremes, but it was not, there wasn't, oh, I would get anything out of it. And I think that was also the reason I wanted to make the show too, because I have felt more fulfilled and happy with my life once I became a father. And I was so disappointed that no one was pointing that out. No one would say how wonderful this process can be and how much happier I am having a family than without. And I know I would have lost something profound in my life if I didn't become a dad. And I wish more men would hear that, because I think they're getting the wrong message that you don't want to be a family man. You're going to lose your independence. You're going to lose, yeah, whatever they want in their life. And I'm like, yeah, some of that's true, but it's not like it's gone forever. And you gain, I think, so much by becoming a dad, so much joy. Yeah.
Mm. Agree 1,000%. We got about 8 minutes left. I think Sean has a hard stop, and we want to ask you three canned questions that we ask of all our guests. But Joe, before we do that, I know you touched on it earlier, but you want to say anything more about when we're going to get these new episodes and how people can get to them?
Thank you, guys. Yes. So right now, the pilot to the show, you can watch on PBS, search Grown Up Dad and PBS. And all my shows are half hour long. And the new episodes, which are topical, that I so much, I hope we get to continue past season one. These are on screen time challenges and friendship and loneliness, on masculinity and where and how that's evolving, and on, you know, media literacy and understanding the role of the internet in our kids' lives. These are going to come out this June on PBS. We're very excited. You'll be able to watch online or, you know, check in with your local PBS station and on Showtime. But we're very excited about this.
So you drop them all four at once? Is that the deal?
Excellent. Another excellent question. We do. So without getting too technical, every PBS station across the country is independent. They make their own schedule. So I can't be like, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 central on this date, everyone will be able to watch it. It's different across the country. But all five go out on May 31st to all of the stations, and the PBS stations, just they create that schedule themselves, how that goes. So that's why it could air, you know, three times on Father's Day, or it could air, you know, seven times the next 3 weeks. You know, it's all different.
I think that there should definitely be, they should run them back to back on Father's Day for sure.
I really hope so. What's nice about five episodes this June is that there are five Sundays and five Mondays. And so we've been pushing like, hey, can you at least schedule one every week in the month of June? And we've heard that might resonate with some of the programmers and the station. So that's, we're hoping cool. That works.
Joe, is your Kickstarter still live too?
Thank you. And our Kickstarter is still live. We did hit our goal, which we're very excited about.
Great.
But we are always looking, thank you so much. We're always looking for additional donations. Every cent goes towards the production of the show.
Okay.
I'm, and as I said, this has been my midlife crisis that continues on and on, that I love making this though. So it's, It really is a joy. But we have producers and we have editors and, you know, very talented camera operators that I do need to pay for. So anything that, you know, anyone can help with, you can go on PayPal, or you can go on Venmo or Kickstarter. We're listed as a nonprofit. Everything is tax deductible, and we'd love your support.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I will just say that I really enjoyed and found the pilot to be sort of a breath of fresh air, right? There's honesty and vulnerability in it.
That means a lot to me. It really does, especially because the next episode too is, I think, even like three times better, because you learn so much in this process and get better. And also, I'm very excited to see myself on screen. I lost a lot of weight between when I did Australia and now. I've lost over 50 pounds. And
wow. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's been its own journey too, and our own search for health. So I like seeing myself now on TV.
I'll have to admit, I was thinking when I watched the first episode, wait, it's PBS and he's going to Australia on the first episode. What's the budget? What's the budget for that?
That's some bad.
No, I was not.
Right. Yeah.
When I made that trip, and actually I was so glad I did, because I knew, I decided to do that before any of this other things happened.
Okay.
Also, yeah. I was worried I would find an investor, but they would be like, you're not going to get to go to Australia. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So that was all my money to make that happen, because I knew how important that story would be in that, and connecting that piece. And so there's a travel and a worldwide element to this as well.
Yeah.
That I'm working to include. So season one is the Australia piece. Season two, we have plans to go to Sweden and Denmark, both countries that are generally considered the best places in the world to raise children and have a family, understanding some of their models. And is there anything that we can bring back here? That is the hope, along with other episodes we want to do about anger, honestly, and issues around family equity and understanding how we can be better partners as fathers. Talking about the challenges of just the everyday expenses, you know, the idea of keeping up with the Joneses and / travel. So I almost want to do a whole episode on just travel sports, because of the crazy time commitments and the amount of money.
Oh, I'm trying to keep this. Good idea.
It's insanity. So we just had that very quickly. Just, we had our first year last year with travel sports and baseball, and I love it. My son loves it, thank God. Because if he didn't, I'd be like, we're out. Like, if you're not enjoying this, we got to stop. Because it was like, hi, I need you to travel in rush hour at 4:30 to get to the game on a Friday. And I'm like, I need to leave work early. I need to pay to do this. I need to get there, and all for a game that, you know, actually that particular game was called in four innings because of the mercy rule. And I was just like, oh, it was longer to travel than I actually played the darn game.
Are you guys both good to go over just a few minutes so we can ask other questions?
Yeah.
Okay, Joe, here we go. This is three canned questions. I'm really interested to hear your responses. The first question is, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
This too shall pass. I wish that I understood so much, like just understanding beyond your own world and understanding that some of these little things are not going to dictate the rest of your life. And actually, hey, you're going to have a pretty good life. You got a great wife. You're going to have a great kid. But even I tell him today too, to have that perspective. I'm like, I was late to fatherhood a bit. I was 33. You know, it's like the best thing in my life didn't come into my life until I was like 33, 34 years old. You know, so it's like, you've got time to figure this out. The rest of your life is not set. So this too shall pass.
I love that. Second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
Leave the gun, take the cannoli? No. my mantra is remember to... Well, okay, that's a great one. I think every episode my mantra might change. I think right now with masculinity, some of the best advice I've gotten to think about it in terms of competence. Like, I feel masculine when I feel competent. And I think competent engrosses so much of the strength and also empathy and both physical and mental state of everything. And so right now I'm working toward feeling competent and not under and not worrying about some of those doubts and insecurities in my life.
I have to share that I wrote down a new mantra with your help earlier in this conversation that I truly believe I may use as the practice as a mantra. It might even be a book title someday, but when you were talking about Bluey, the mantra is 7 good minutes, right? Sometimes if you just focus on that, right?
You're writing a book?
Well, I just decided to.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Well.
But isn't that a good mantra, though?
You continue that conversation with me. I love that. I really love that. Maybe that should be mine, too. But there is so many, like, 7 good minutes can really turn your whole day around.
Amen. Amen to that.
I love that. Thank you, Chris. I mean so much.
Yeah. Final question, Joe, and then we'll let you off the hook here. What do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
You're the very handsome man now. That he had the hard conversations and decided to just love his family with every ounce of energy he had.
Really good, Joe.
Guys, that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for making it happen.
I like that. I might steal a couple of those questions from my interviews too. That's really nice at the end. You could just take that a new direction, all of that. Why are those your lightning round questions? There's so much more to dive into with you
there,
guys.
There is, but you know that's a like a week long retreat there. You know?
Right. Yeah, just leave everybody hanging. And there's many a time where we want to dig in and we can't. We gotta just leave them. Just gotta leave it. I think on occasion.
You use those with Men Living, with your retreats and your groups? Because those are great questions.
We do not. It's exclusive to if you've come this far.
Uh-huh. I'm honored by that, too. But they're great questions. guys, thank you for doing what you're doing. Please keep it up. Please keep these conversations elevated. It is a great time to be a dad. And I think we're just starting to really dig into what it is we want to accomplish and want to be. Yeah. And I love that you're doing this. Thank you.
Thanks,
Same
Joe.
To you, Joe. Same to you.
All right, listen, good luck. Go Birds. Yeah, we'll be in touch.
Peace and love, guys.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out at menliving.org.